The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights.
Here comes the big one.
He has his own Twitter account, so you know he's a big deal.
Please welcome
the Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
We are back in the Fan 590. Going to be talking Blue Jays right now, and I want to know, we're getting to the point now the Jays have rounded out their coaching staff. We're getting to the point where we're going to start talking about personnel moves on the field, free agents, trades, all that good stuff, the stuff that keeps a hot stove burning. So I just want to know from you this hour, who do you think the Blue Jays should target, either via free agency or in the trade market? 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-660-590. Those are the numbers to call in. Free agents, players and other teams, give me your best idea. You play Alex Anthopoulos. I'm tired of it. You play Alex Anthopoulos. You tell me what you do. At this point, though, we are very pleased to be joined by one of the newest members of the Blue Jays staff, Torrey Lovullo, the first base coach for John Farrell. Torrey, thanks so much for being with us in the Fan 590.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
Welcome to Toronto, I guess, the first thing to say. You managed the Pawtucket Red Sox, and I know you and John go back a fair ways. Can you tell us just a little bit about John? Because I think we're still in the stage where we're trying to get acclimated to the guy, and we're trying to figure out what makes him tick. I mean, I've got to tell you, my email response, and I've covered baseball since 1988 and 89. My email response from fans, the stuff that I read in the blogs has been really, really positive. He's made a very good initial first impression, which is probably no surprise to you, I would think.
No, absolutely not. And, I do say that he's a very dynamic person. He's special in so many different ways. And through the interview process, I'm sure that Alex was able to catch that. And, the fans of Toronto will not be disappointed in their new leader, and we're all just excited. I'm excited to get on board and fall under him and do all that I can to watch and learn and help this team continue moving forward to win a championship. But John Farrell is a dynamic person. I think the people of Toronto are going to see that. He's charismatic. He has a presence, and it should be a really fun ride.
Torrey Lovullo joins us in the Fan 590. You and Don Wakamatsu both have some managing experience. How much do you think that John will rely on you in the course of a game? John's background obviously is a pitching coach, and I know that you could see him pretty much side by side with Terry Francona through games with the Red Sox. But when it comes to actually pulling the levers in a game and making moves, how much do you think he'll be tapping into both you and Don to get your input?
Well, I mean, that's very understandable that, there's small concerns that he hasn't been a field manager before. But, I know John and watching him and talking to him that he's been managing games, while watching games, for the past 3 or 4 years. And he's learned from the best in Tito Francona. And, the transition to that seat shouldn't be a big deal. And I know that he's going to rely on all the outside sources that he possibly can to make the best decisions as quickly as he possibly can. On my side of it, I am the first base coach and working probably on the field and not in his little circle. And I think that's why he has Don Wakamatsu there. And everybody knows that Don is a former manager with the Mariners. He's learned under Buck Showalter. So he's got tremendous knowledge. And I know that relationship is going to be formed and very strong, and they're going to make those quick decisions internally. But I know the type of leader that John is, he won't hesitate to reach out when he can to as many people as he can to make the best decisions. Now, fortunately, in baseball, the decisions that need to be made are quick and swift. You have to kind of forecast what's going to happen, and I know that's one thing that John is going to figure out quickly. And working hand-in-hand with Don and the rest of his staff, I'm sure that he's not going to have any issues, transitioning into that situation.
Torrey Lovullo joins us in the Fan 590, 416-870-0590, star 590. 1-888-666-0590. We're getting the Hot Stove League started here. The Jays have named their coaching staff. Now it's time to start talking about players, free agents, trades. I want your take on it. I want to know who you would like to see Alex Anthopoulos go after. Torey Lovullo. We know from watching the Red Sox that John is a guy who I would think when you're a pitching coach, there's a certain amount of gut instinct you need based on what you're seeing from your pitcher. As far as exercising influence on a game, knowing when to put a hit and run on, things of that nature, is there a different gut sense there? Is it the same? I mean, basically, I guess at the end of the day, we're talking about having an understanding of the flow of the game, such as it is in baseball, correct?
You know, you're right. And I think you're talking about a general gut feel, when to do things and how to do things at the right time. And I think, being in that position of, where John is now, it's about managing people and putting them in the best situations possible to be successful, and following the flow of the game and just using your instincts to keep moving forward. So good things continue to happen. I have no doubt in my mind that, over the years that I've known John, and I've watched him learn and I've watched him get into different settings and quickly figure things out. And the one thing that he's great at is thinking on his feet. You know, he thinks quickly on his feet. He's going to figure out exactly when to do things and how to do things the right way. I know everybody knows that he is a pitcher, and everybody knows that the strength that is initially going to be his strength. And it's the game revolves around pitching and defense, and it's a great place to start for him. It's a great place for him to say this is going to be my strength. But the people and the fans of Toronto should be very, very excited to find this is going to be a pretty dynamic leader and a guy that's going to figure out how to help this team win a championship. And that's ultimately what we want to do. We don't want to just get by. We compete in really, as far as we're concerned, the toughest division in all of baseball. And we've got to go out there and we've got to do spectacular things and hope for the best outcomes. And the bottom line is we want to win a world championship.
Torey, is there a Red Sox way of doing things? As I said, you managed Pawtucket Red Sox. John Farrell was the major league pitching coach. I know your roots with John go back to playing days in Anaheim and also to a certain degree the Cleveland Indians. To the minor league system. But is there a Red Sox way of doing things, that maybe that we might see brought over to Toronto?
That's a good question. Everybody thinks that there's a magic solution to winning baseball games and winning championships. And the Red Sox certainly have a great ingredient. I think that their leadership and their desire to win each and every year is evident. But there is not one specific Red Sox way. I think that Terry Francona demands your best effort. Terry Francona demands that you have a high baseball IQ. You go out there and you're a good teammate. And I know that John is going to follow that same philosophy. I know that he's going to expect the most out of his players. He's going to expect a championship level caliber of play each and every day, and there's not going to be any negotiation. You're going to have to give your best effort to move forward to help this team win a championship. I think that's a common denominator in Major League Baseball. And then the other key ingredient is to have the horses, and that's certainly what's in place here in Toronto. I know that from the outside looking in over the past couple of years that they have a great nucleus of young starting pitching. They've got some of the best offensive players in baseball. So it's there. It's all there, and the package is kind of gift wrapped to John, and it's now time for the Blue Jays to move forward. And like I said, compete in one of the best divisions of all of baseball. We can't just get by. That can't be the mentality. We've got to go out there and do our job.
Torey Lovullo is the first base coach of the Toronto Blue Jays, named yesterday along with the rest of the Blue Jays staff. John Farrell was very clear in his conference call yesterday that you are the guy, I think his word is, you are the guy that he would confide in and bounce stuff off at times of, not crisis, but at times where tough decisions had to be made or at times where there was pressure. And how much of what you have to do initially with this team is going to be walking a bit of a fine line, because you don't want to be known as the manager's guy, but you don't want to be known as the manager's guy, if you know what I mean. I'm talking about the clubhouse dynamic and the politics of the clubhouse.
Right. I know what you're saying. I don't want to be John Farrell's pet. I don't want to be the guy that, is following him around. I think that there's some uniqueness to every staff. And, I know all of the other staff members. I've had conversations, and some of them have coached me. I played for Butterfield for a short period of time. I played with Dwayne Murphy for a short period of time, and Bruce Walton and I go back way back to West Coast college baseball. So, I'm excited to start up with this group of guys and be on this staff with them, and it should be very exciting. But I'm honored that John Farrell feels that strongly about our relationship, because I certainly feel the same way. I know initially he's probably going to have to work into some relationships with some of the guys, and he knows he can turn to me and not be judged or viewed any differently. I'll be there for him on any level to help him in any situation. And I'm not going to force feed I'm not going to force feed myself on anybody. I'm just going to migrate into my position, do the best that I possibly can, and be there. And be serviceable for any of those guys, because we are a staff, and we are going to set the tone. And it starts with us, and it ends with the players. And I think that the players have to see that the staff is united, and it's going to be a pretty spectacular group of guys. And I can't wait to get things started.
Torrey Lovello, thanks so much for joining us in the Fan 590. I really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you, and look forward to working with you.
All right, me too, Jeff. Have a good one. I appreciate the time.
Take care. That is Torrey Lovello, the new first base coach of the Toronto Blue Jays. And let's be clear, he is going to be the guy that John Farrell will confide in. He is the guy that John Farrell is closest to in the staff. And when you put together a major league staff, there's always a little give and take. You don't just go out, people will say, well, we'll go out and put together the best staff. It's very simple. The general manager gets a guy, the manager gets a guy. Like, everybody, there's a balance that needs to be struck in terms of a cultural balance. And the Jays are, I know, according to Alex Anthopoulos, the Jays are still looking at adding a Latino, you can call it an advisor, in some sort of advisory capacity, a guy who will be in uniform before games, a guy who will be on the field, a guy who will be taking part in drills but will not be in uniform during the game. That guy will probably be Luis Rivera. So the Jays are going to try to address that aspect of the staff. But when you put a staff together, you make trade-offs. This is what I wrote today in today's Globe. Everybody makes a trade-off. Everybody gets a little piece of the pie. Everybody's got to have their guy, and it's all got to come together. And as John Farrell said, Torrey Lovello will be the guy he'll confide in. He's the guy he's going to bounce stuff off of. And especially initially, Torrey Lovello is going to have a huge say in what goes on with this team. And more to the point, if Don Wakamatsu does get the Mets job, he's apparently interviewing for the Mets job either Wednesday or Thursday. I don't think he's going to get it. I think that's one of the reasons the Jays felt they could make this announcement. But if, in fact, he does get that job, Torrey Lovello will be the bench coach of this team. And that is a sign, I think, of where he stands with the manager. As I said, it wasn't a surprise. As soon as John Farrell was announced manager, everybody that I know wrote that Torrey Lovello was going to be part of the coaching staff. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-660-0590. I got people who want the Blue Jays to get Prince Fielder. We're going to let you play Blue Jays general manager.
Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
It's 11:22. We're back in the Fan 590. We are talking Blue Jays. Just heard from Torrey Lovello, the new first base coach of the Blue Jays. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. We are asking the question. Well, we asked you to be an NHL general manager the last hour. Now we're asking you to be Alex Anthopoulos. We are asking you to come up with moves you would make this offseason. Free agents you'd like to see the Jays sign. Players you'd like to see them try to acquire through trade. I mean, it's never too early to get the hot stove league started. And we're going to do that a lot in the show, because I am of the firm belief that trade rumors are a hoot. And talking trade rumors, great fun. And tomorrow we're also going to do, I think, a special experiment involving the Leafs, but you have to tune in for that. We're concocting something here, almost a Pavlovian Leafs experiment, which we'll bring out tomorrow. But right now we're talking about the Toronto Blue Jays and what they should or should not do. Emmett and Kobokonk, you're on the Fan 590.
How you doing, Jeff?
Good, sir.
Good. Now, the sky may be a little pink in my world, but I've got a couple of moves I'd like to see.
Fire away.
One, I'd like to see him package up some of this young pitching we got and maybe acquire Prince Fielder to play first base, throw in some extra bat, move Bautista to the third base, and go sign Carl Crawford and throw the bank at him.
Well, you'd have to throw the bank at Carl Crawford. Unfortunately, the Yankees are going to throw the bank at Carl Crawford, and their bank trumps yours right now. But if I could pick anybody out there right now and say, add this guy and he'd make the Blue Jays instantly better, Carl Crawford would be the guy.
Absolutely.
He would fill so many, you know, whether it's a leadoff spot. He just, his style of play, he's the guy. He is the perfect guy for the Blue Jays. But I honestly do believe that he's a guy who's going to cash in big, and he'll end up, the Yankees will make room for him somehow. Although, I mean, clearly with Brett Gardner and Curtis Granderson, you wouldn't think that, you know, outfield's necessarily a pressing issue for them. But, I mean, he's a guy that they'll go after very strongly. Prince Fielder is really an interesting case only because there seems to be a sense around baseball now that baseball people have always worried about Prince Fielder's body. They've always looked at it as being the type of body that could just, you know, is flabby. It could just, like, implode. You could show up in spring training one day and just be, like, you know, the Goodyear blimp. And that, when you're talking about giving long-term money to a guy, that is becoming more and more of an issue for teams. And to get Prince Fielder, you have to assume you're going to have to negotiate a long-term contract with him. He's a great player. He's a phenomenal player. I love his game. I love what he brings to the clubhouse. He's got a bit of an edge. You know, he's a guy that scares the hell out of the opposing team when he's at the plate. I just don't know if I want to commit long-term to the guy. And I think anybody who goes out and gets him has to operate under the assumption it's a long-term arrangement. Jesse in Oakville, you're on the Fan 590.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I would go after, you know, give Manny Ramirez serious consideration. I think surrounding him in a lineup with Wells and Lind and get rid of Olivier somehow. But, you know, and also I keep Bautista in right field. There's been talk about him moving to third. No, he says he doesn't want to go there. I say keep him in right field after a season he's had. I think he earned it. And Beltre would be obvious, but I don't think we're going to get Beltre. But I'm going to hang up and I'll just let you hear.
I'm with you on Bautista in right field. I keep going back and forth on it because he could be a pretty good third baseman as well. I think he could be a superior third baseman, and I really do think you need production from your infield corners. But I like, you know, that arm in right field. It became a weapon this year, frankly. It became a run-limiting, base-limiting weapon. And more to the point, Bautista knows how to use it. I mean, there are a lot of guys with great arms who have no clue what to do with it. Bautista rarely overthrows a cutoff guy. Bautista is one of those guys who has an acute sense of what he is. And, you know, they talk about guys playing within themselves. I think that's, frankly, a lot of hooey. But I think what you really do see with good players is they have an acute sense of self. They know their limitations. They also know when they can stretch those limitations. There are a couple of times a game, or maybe a couple of times a week even, when you can stretch, you can go beyond your limitations as a professional athlete. You can't do it every day. It just can't be done. Nobody can do that. But there are a couple of times a week when you can do it, and Bautista knows when to do that. And I really like him in right field. And you know what? I think the caller's absolutely right. He's earned the right to call a shot as to where he wants to play for the Blue Jays. He's happier in right field. I think he deserves to be there. And, you have to address third base in some other way. Beltran makes a lot of sense. I just don't know. Again, he's another guy, I think, even in this tight economic market. He's another guy that I think some team will overpay for. And not just in terms of dollars, but in contract length. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-660-590. You be Alex Anthopoulos. You tell me what the Blue Jays need to do this offseason. Rob in Toronto, you're on the Fan 590.
Well, I think I have third base addressed if Jose's playing in the outfield. I'd like a guy like Sean Figgins. I know he's got a big ticket contract, but he probably comes cheap. He seems to go good year, bad year. He can play third base. He can run. He can hit the top of the lineup. And I don't know, maybe Don Wakamatsu's got some insight into him. I'd like for them to go for a guy like that. I think he's a very, very low-risk investment considering what you'd pay for him.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. Boy, you talk to people around the Angels, and you talk to them about Sean Figgins, and I think he's one of those guys that sort of flies under the radar a little bit. But he, I think the only concern with him is you expect at some point that it's just gonna fall off the cliff, that the production is gonna stop completely, there's been some concern that he's played hurt an awful lot. He got a 4-year contract, $36 million. He signed in 2010. There's a club option for 2014. Maybe a couple of years ago, I'd take a look at him. I'm not certain right now. I think I could go in another direction. But, I mean, the caller's right. He certainly addresses a lot of issues. He addresses a lot of the same issues that Carl Crawford addresses. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-660-590. We've already had somebody suggest that the Blue Jays go after Manny Ramirez, Prince Fielder. I think those are, Manny, they're going to talk. They're going to talk about Manny. I don't have to get anything done, but I know they're going to talk about Manny. You can take that to the bank. They'll talk about Manny. They'll try to come to, they'd like him to sign a low base salary contract with a lot of incentives. And they'll talk about it. I don't know if it's going to get, I think a lot depends, frankly, on what Manny is looking for. If Manny's willing to sacrifice money for years, I don't know if the Blue Jays want to get locked into a long-term thing with him in terms of years. I mean, Manny may be happy to take somebody's 3-year contract at a reduced rate just to get the 3-year contract. Although, why the hell anybody would offer Manny Ramirez 3 years? I don't know. Mike in Mississauga, you're on the Fan 590.
Hi, Jeff. I totally agree with your previous caller about Carl Crawford. He's a base stealer. We can go further with Crawford, but I don't agree with Ramirez, and I don't agree with Fielder. I just think they're too much money for, what you're going to get.
Yeah, and I think Fielder, I mean, you get my point about Fielder, though, too, right? I mean, the guy's a great player, but don't you look at that body and go, wow, I mean, that's one catastrophic injury away from a 2-year rehabilitation.
Oh, no question. He's a big boy. The one I'm thinking about is Jonathan Papelbon.
Yeah, and it makes a certain, we talked about that a little bit, it makes a certain amount of sense. I have to admit, I mean, it's one thing I wanted to ask John Farrell about, and I didn't. I don't know what their relationship was like. I mean, I'm not saying that as if I have any expectations that the relationship's bad or that there's any issues there. I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't know whether they were close. Papelbon did not have a great year. I don't know what the dynamic was between him and Farrell. I do know that the Red Sox are ready to hand Daniel Bard the closer's job, as they should. And Papelbon is a chip for them. And he's a guy that I think still has a lot of upside. And he's a guy that not only does he have upside, he's a guy who's proven he can close in the toughest division in baseball. And for that reason, you'd like to think the Blue Jays could use a guy like that, because the closer spot is an area right now of flux. I wouldn't say it's an area of some concern necessarily. It's too early in the year to have an area of concern with the team. It's too early in the offseason to have an area of concern with the team. But clearly, with Scott Downs, Jason Fraser, and Kevin Gregg, not under contract, clearly, the back end of the bullpen is an issue for the Blue Jays. Mike in Toronto, you're on the Fan 590.
Yeah, I think for DH, we should sign Manny Ramirez. I think you put him up before Batista, and he'll get on base, and Batista can bring him home. you know, because I think Adam Lund can be first baseman.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I want to see. Here's where I stand in Adam Lind. I want Adam Lind to have a full spring training at first base from day one. I want to see him play first base. And if he is the failure that a lot of people seem to think he's going to be, and I haven't seen it. I mean, he's not a polished first baseman by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think he's a defensive black hole. I don't get that sense. But nonetheless, I want to see him play first base in spring training. And you know what? If there's an issue, then you address it. I mean, you can always find a decent defensive first baseman.
Yeah.
You always can. But I think ultimately, for him to have maximum impact for this team and for him to have maximum impact on this roster, on this lineup, you want him in the field because you'd rather have that DH position filled by a guy, you know, by an older guy, by an older slugger. At least that's the way I am. I'd rather have it, you know, we have this. Frank Thomas has created this fear among Blue Jays fans about, you know, getting the veteran DH in. I mean, Frank Thomas's first year was not bad. So if you can get a guy like that in for a year, I have no problem doing that. But I really do want to see Adam Lind at first base. I want to see a spring training of Adam Lind. I want to see him have to react. I want to see how he handles serious day-to-day work at improving himself defensively, because you can't do that during the season because guys are tired and you're worried about your hitting. Especially if you're a guy like Adam Lind, you had a bad offensive year. You had a lot in your plate. I don't know if the Adam Lind we saw at first base this season is necessarily the Adam Lind you could see at first base long term, just because I think he had so much on his plate this year offensively. And I want to see him have a full spring training.
Take control. Join the Sport Authority panel and tell us what to do. Online at fan590.com. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590.
We are back on the Fan 590. I am Jeff Blair. I can't decide if I like the song or not. Probably not. We're attempting to roust one of our very favorites, Hub Arkush, longtime NFL reporter, to talk about last night's talk about the Monday night game between the Steelers and the Bengals. And you can't tell me after watching that game that the National Football League's edict, crackdown, whatever you want to call it, on headshots, on helmet-to-helmet hits. I mean, God, headshots, helmet-to-helmet hits, NHL, NFL, all runs together. On helmet-to-helmet hits, hasn't had a little bit of an impact. I look at that last drive of the game. Two plays stand out. One, Troy Polamalu could have absolutely knocked Terrell Owens into the next decade. I mean, he could have ended his career on a pass over the middle. And he hit him shoulder. It was a shoulder hit. I mean, it just rocked him. But it was a shoulder hit. It was a great hit. And then, of course, the last pass of the game to Shipley. And it just James Harrison closed in. And again, solid hit. Solid hit. Knocked the ball out. But a clean hit. I'm beginning to think that maybe some of these guys are getting it. I'm beginning to think that some of these guys are understand that you don't necessarily have to cripple a guy to tackle him. And I defy anybody who saw that hit by Polamalu to think that there was anything, that was any less exciting than Merriweather's hit or any of the other hits that have got us talking about helmet-to-helmet hits. I defy anybody to tell me that. And I thought it was very apparent. It really, really stood out. And it was a terrific game as well. And we're very pleased at this time to be joined by the editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub, thank you very much for joining us.
How you doing?
I wanted to ask you that. I mean, I don't know if you heard my little riff while our producer was getting you, but those two hits late in the game last night, I'm thinking of Paul Amala's hit and the last play of the game, the last hit of the game on Shipley that caused the ball to come out. Were those examples of maybe players, maybe an awareness of the helmet-to-helmet hit coming into place? Because, you know, it just seemed to me, especially in Paul Amala's case, there was a deliberate attempt to go shoulder on the guy. Did you get that sense? Or, I mean, is it just maybe because, you know, it was the only football game on and those two plays are standing out? But it just resonated with me for some reason.
I think that everybody is becoming a little hyper-vigilant, hyper-sensitive, if you will, trying to read into it. I don't know, you know, what these guys are thinking. And I think it's unfortunate in what the league has done that it suggests that these guys don't attempt to play safe most or all of the time, you know, and that is the way they're taught to tackle from youth. Nobody's taught to spear or lead with his head. It happens. I think the efforts to get the obvious ones and the dangerous ones out of the game are fine. I think the league has gone too far, and I think they've made it hard for guys to play their game. So, you know, when we see it done right now, should we assume that it has anything to do with the league? No, I think we should assume it's that they're great players who, you know, we're always taught that way.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the exception are these other helmet-to-helmet hits that is not something anybody really is trying to do.
Hub Arkus joins us in the Fan 590. The game last night, I mean, I know the Bengals' record isn't very good, but Terrell Owens really seems to be interested in playing football again, doesn't he?
Well, you know, I think he's always been interested in playing football. I think his problem is he's always wanted to do it his way, and he's always put Terrell Owens ahead of the team. And, you know, maybe that's what's happening in Cincinnati because nobody saw this club struggling at 2-6. And, you know, what happened to Ocho Cinco, who was every bit as good and productive until T.O. got there? Now, obviously, Carson Palmer at this point is much more comfortable with Owens.
Mm-hmm.
You even saw Ocho Cinco acting out a little bit on television last night, or at least being a little childish. You know, it's pretty impressive when you think about it at 36 that this guy can play receiver the way he does in the NFL. He's obviously one of the all-time greats. You know, he's got slam dunk Hall of Fame numbers. It's always been the mental part that has troubled him. And for now, you know, he seems to be comfortable, I think in large part because of his friendship with Chad Johnson.
Hub Arkus joins us in the Fan 590 talking the NFL. Well, I mean, the story, of course, the big story of the day, the Dallas Cowboys finally putting Wade Phillips out of his misery. Jason Garrett is the interim guy. Is there any sense that he can take that interim job and make it something permanent?
Most experts or insiders would say no. You know, there's a reason that he wasn't already a head coach. You know, he was anointed by Jerry Jones. They continue to report that he turned down the Ravens and the Dolphins a few years ago. The fact is there's no confirmation that those jobs were actually offered. You know, he was a candidate. There's no question about that. Many will tell you that he is every bit as responsible as Wade Phillips is for the problems with the Cowboys right now, and neither one of them is anywhere near as responsible as Jerry Jones.
Right.
You know, it seems unlikely that until Jones is willing to change what he's doing, that any coach is going to be successful there. And then when you single out Jason Garrett and you say, is he the guy who could overcome it? Well, the only two guys who've overcome it in the 22-plus years that Jones has owned the team are Jimmy Johnson and Bill Parcells, you know, and two of the great all-time coaches. We have no reason at this point in his career to believe that Jason Garrett is one of those guys.
Is there any sense in your mind that, you know, with the Super Bowl in Dallas, with Jerry Jones having you know, invested a lot in this thing, frankly, do you think maybe he'll be wiser at the end of this year with the Super Bowl in his stadium, but, you know, with a team that will probably not have a very good record? Do you think maybe he'll get it this time? Because it's clear he's not going anywhere as an owner. I think we could say that, you know, unless there's some sort of financial trouble we don't know about. But do you think maybe this is where he gets it, you know, and says, okay, you know, I can't keep doing what I was doing. I've got to get somebody in here and basically give them the keys, you know, the way and let it work the way it's supposed to work.
Well, his most recent statement has been absolutely not. you know, that he refuses to consider a head coach that will have personnel power. And therein lies his problem. You know, again, the only success he's ever had is when he's had other people taking care of personnel. He is not a football guy. He cannot compete with the top talent scouts and football people in the NFL. He fancies himself an Al Davis renegade type of the 70s and 80s. The difference is that Al Davis was once an AFL Coach of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Jones does not have the pedigree or the resume. And so, you know, all we can do is listen to what the guy says. And at this point, he's more defiant than ever. And so the answer would appear to be absolutely not, you know, that he's going to continue to plod down this path and let his ego get in the way of his common sense.
Hub Arkus, the editor of Pro Football Weekly, joins us in the Fan 590. Tell us, I mean, if you could sit down and say, these are the reasons you'd want to be head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, these are the reasons you wouldn't want to be head coach, what would some of them be? Like, if you're on the outside right now and a guy that maybe, you know, Jerry Jones may have an interest in as a coach, what would be the selling point for you, and what would be the thing that would make you think? And again, you know, I'm operating under the assumption you're a coach that people want. What would be the thing that might make you think, you know what, I'd rather wait for another opportunity?
Well, the first thing you have to realize, and all these guys know it, is there's only 32 of these jobs in the world, and some of the greatest coaches of all time never got or never get the opportunity. And so waiting is a mistake unless you know it's a situation where you're doomed to fail. Now, some might view this as that type of situation. I think the big question is how much talent is really there. We keep hearing about all the talent that's
there.
And I got to tell you, I think it's the most overrated roster in the NFL. There's some good players there, but is that a complete NFL team? Not even close, because they don't have anybody in the GM office who knows how to build an NFL team. So the first reason, in spite of that, that you take the job is because you don't pass up these chances. You know, you get a chance to be a head coach, especially if it's a first-time head coach. Now, if it's a veteran who's already had a job or two, he might be a little more careful. But if you haven't had one before and you get a crack in it, that's why these guys take these jobs in Buffalo and Cincinnati and Tampa and Seattle. They're just too hard to come by to let them go. I think the number two reason is that they've got the highest payroll in the NFL. Jones's ego is boundless, and so he will certainly spend the money and make the commitment to put the right pieces in place. The question is, can you have enough impact on him to make sure you get the right pieces in place? And there's the only negative. I mean, you know, Dallas is a great city. It's not a heritage franchise. People forget it was an expansion team, but it certainly is one of the most popular franchises in the NFL. There's nothing negative about coaching in Dallas other than Jerry Jones. And so, you know, they're both pretty short lists. You know, absolutely, you got to take the job if you get it. You want the job. You can just hope that you can find a way to overcome the owner. You know, as far as, you know, reasons that you would take it, the only reason you wouldn't take it is the fear that you can't overcome Jones.
Hub Arkus joins us in the Fan 590. Randy Moss, you know, is with the Titans now and is learning the playbook, as they say. What type of an impact do you expect to see him have on this team? You know, I mean, it's obviously it's not been the smoothest year for Randy Moss, and I've got to think that you know, a coach like Jeff Fisher probably is probably well aware of what he's getting, and has probably made pretty clear to Randy sort of where, you know, where things stand. But what impact can he have on this team, just, you know, fundamentally?
You know, for starters, you got to realize that even though Kenny Britt is listed as out for this week, I think if he was being honest behind closed doors, Jeff Fisher would tell you they fear he's done for 4, 5, 6 weeks. They don't even know if they'll get him back 100% this season, and they're a team with a shot at going deep, so they had to take the chance.
You never know about hamstrings, do you?
No,
really?
No, and this one doesn't appear to be a mild one. So that said, I don't know that there's anything that Randy Moss can do at this point that's going to get him the contract he wants after this one. He wanted one more contract that supposedly is what started all this trouble going back to the offseason and training camp in New England. But if there's any chance at all that somebody out there is going to take a chance on a 2 or 3 year deal for $20-30 million and think that they can get it out of this guy, he has got to be perfect in Tennessee. He knows that. He's not stupid. Nobody's ever accused Randy of being stupid.
Yeah.
He may be a little nuts, but he ain't stupid. And so I really think it's that simple. That's what Jeff has to focus him on, and he needs to convince him that, you know, an incredible, you know, superhuman performance can get him what he wants. Anything short of that, and he's done. He's toast. I mean, somebody might bring him in next year for, you know, close to the minimum and a bunch of incentives, but that's not what Randy Moss wants. And that's what made it such a great gamble for Fisher and the Titans.
Hub, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right, take care.
Take care. That is Hub Arkus, the editor of Pro Football Weekly and an NFL reporter for Westwood One, talking about the National Football League. And, of course, the line story out of the National Football League is the Dallas Cowboys getting rid of Wade Phillips, naming Jason Garrett their interim head coach. And after having just spent a couple of days in Dallas during the World Series, I cannot begin to tell you, and I think I made the point when I did the show from Dallas, I cannot begin to tell you how much that city lives and breathes Cowboys. And, you know, we joke a little bit about how the Maple Leafs are so much a part of this city, and how Maple Leafs fans are so wound up in every little detail of the team. I got to tell you, you spend some time in Dallas when the Dallas Cowboys are losing, and it's on a different level. I mean, the only thing I could compare it to, and again, that's only a couple of days, but it was a couple of days where they're in the middle of a pretty significant crisis. The only thing I can compare it to is being in Montreal when the Canadiens aren't doing well. It is really over the top. It's beyond what you might even think.